Okay, so you'll notice on your sheets just a couple of things. Again, I mentioned sections 3 and 4 from last week have been replaced. Everything, I tried to footnote everything. So if you're interested in looking anything up, I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. It's all based on the Chofetz Chaim Sefer on Shmiras HaLashon. He broke his Sefer up into two separate parts, Hilchos Lashon Hara and Hilchos Rechilus. So all the footnotes today, as you see from numbers 1 and on, are all in the first section of Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, and it's listed there, and you could look anything up if you would like. I mentioned also that I hope you all experienced this week what I did and what you did as well, that you're more aware of the way that you speak over the course of the week. It doesn't necessarily mean you stop saying the things you wanted to say, it just means you're more aware of the fact that you're saying things that you shouldn't be saying, which is the first step. And once you hit that awareness, then you're usually much more capable, if you continue it, from stopping. I was reminded of a story that Rav Moshe Weinberger tells. He's a Rav in New York. And when he was in yeshiva, there was that one fellow who was the big Lashon Hara guy. He never spoke Lashon Hara. Like, he couldn't say a word to him because he didn't want to hear, he didn't want to know, he couldn't say good morning to him because maybe it wasn't such a good morning. Like, there's nothing that you could possibly say to this guy because that was his thing. And he remembers after one of the Bein Hazmanim's breaks in the yeshiva when they went home for Pesach or for the summer, and they come back on the first day of the next semester of the yeshiva, they're sitting at lunch, and he just lets out this juicy piece of Lashon Hara, and everyone's sort of just, you know, their mouths dropped. So he says, that was last month I was working on Lashon Hara. This month I'm working on, you know, Kavana and Davening. So I'm hoping that we all continue the process that we are starting, and even as we will learn new halakhas in the coming weeks, but take this and run with it. Okay, last week we learned all the things that we can't do. Last week we learned about the different categories of Lashon Hara, all on your sheets, the different types of rechilos, in which you say over to person A what person B had already said about person A, and you connect the two by telling this person what they were saying about them and about Lashon Hara, in which you're talking to your friend about something which happened to somebody else, all of which is in a derogatory kind of way, makes the person about whom you are speaking look bad, inappropriate, and that is the basic rule of Lashon Hara, as we had spoken at length last week. So tonight I want to focus on two new categories. One is the concept of listening to Lashon Hara. There's a whole separate discussion. And then we'll talk about some of the major exceptions where you are allowed to either both speak and or listen to Lashon Hara. So let's start with the concept of accepting or listening to Lashon Hara. So number one, the prohibition applies just as much to the listener as it does to the speaker. That's clear in the Torah and the pasuk that we had brought last week. The main pasuk brought is actually a reference to the listener, not to listen to a report, an evil report. And the Rambam writes, based on the Gemara, Lashon Hara kills three people. When he writes the word kills, not that it physically kills, but that it leads to the death, either in the physical term, because people get into fights, or even in the spiritual term as well. Three people, the speaker, the listener, and the one who is spoken about. And the Rambam concludes that the listener is punished the most of them all. So the Rambam's understanding of this concept of Lashon Hara is actually worse to be on the receiving end than it is to be the speaker. Doesn't explain why, but it's worth noting that in Rambam's understanding, that's how he views it. Now, what does it mean to listen to or to hear Lashon Hara? What is the prohibition of listening to that? So the definition, as the Chofetz Chaim writes over and over and over again, is accepting and believing the statement that you hear as being true. That is the prohibition of listening to Lashon Hara, that I hear something about someone else, that which I'm hearing is derogatory, it's negative, it's detrimental to the person about whom is being spoken, and I believe it. I accept it as true. Now remember, the speaker holds this to be true. The whole concept of Lashon Hara is where what you're saying is true. If you're making up lies about somebody, that's a whole separate category called Motzi Shemra. You're a liar. We're talking about where the person speaking to you believes to the very essence of their bones what they're saying is true. We know that. That's what's being said to us. The prohibition is us as the listener, where the only source of information that we have is this person in front of me telling me about person A, and I accept your report about them, and I take your words and facts, and I accept that, and I believe it. That is the prohibition of Lashon Hara. Now, the Chofetz Chaim points out, you don't need to verbally in any way acknowledge that. It doesn't have to be where you say, oh yeah, you just internally, you hear, you accept, you believe what you hear to be true. That is the classic prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara. Now, the reason for that is because when you hear something degrading about somebody, it's only when you accept that does it actually complete the process of the degrading process against the person. If I don't believe what you're saying, if I think you're making that up or you're misinterpreting the facts, well, then we haven't done anything wrong, because the person about whom we're speaking, I just think you got the story wrong. But if I actually believe what it is that you're saying, that like connects the circuit, that completes the process of what it is that you're saying. I now accept it as fact, what you have told me, and therein lies the problem of accepting Lashon Hara. Now, Chafetz Chaim was asked to point out, as we'll run through over here, that it doesn't make a difference even if it's said in front of many people. There's no heter, there's no relaxation of the rules that say just because I'm standing up here and I'm talking in front of a group of people and I'm telling you something about something else, someone that makes them look bad, that it's somehow any better because there are a lot of you. Each and every one of you who would accept the story that I'm telling about so-and-so would have that prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara, and it's certainly worse for me, the more people to whom you tell, I think we discussed this, someone asked a question last week, the more people in front of whom I'm speaking, the worse that it is for me, and for each one of you individually would be a problem. So that doesn't make any difference as well. Now we're going to get back to this point, because there's a famous statement in the Gemara about speaking in front of at least three people. So we'll get to that. But the starting point is, as far as the listener goes, accepting the derogatory statements about somebody else, even in front of more than three people, is just as prohibited, and we'll discuss exactly where that leniency comes in. Now, it also doesn't help that many people are saying it, so that if four people, five people come in and they say, wow, we just got back from so-and-so's Shabbos table, and so-and-so, the head of the table, said this, and all four of them are so quick, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't help you whatsoever as the listener that the people who are saying it are many, because just because there are a lot of people saying it, that doesn't allow you to accept as a statement of fact something true about somebody else just because they're saying it. If it's something which we already know, is a different story. So if four people would testify in front of the Beis Din and somehow it was relevant to the Beis Din and the Beis Din would accept the testimony, well then the fact that there are a lot of people, maybe that becomes a fact. But right now it's just a couple of people talking in the streets. Doesn't matter how many people are doing the talking or how many people are being spoken to, we as individuals all have the prohibition, says the Chafetz Chaim, of accepting as true the statements being made. Now the Chafetz Chaim says the Schiddush, that even if the person about whom you are speaking is there, let's say you're sitting at a Shabbos table and someone's telling a story about somebody else. Oh, remember when you went to, and they go on and on and on about this person. And the story doesn't really leave the person who's being spoken about in a great light. And it's a little bit embarrassing to them, and it's a little bit degrading, and it's Lashon Hara. But they're sitting right there in front of you, and they don't say anything. No, that's not what happened, or they don't explain anything. So the Chafetz Chaim says a Chiddush as follows. If the person were to agree and say, yes, it's true, yes, 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 it's true, then it's not Lashon Hara for me to accept it. Because remember, Lashon Hara is my accepting as a fact something which you are relating to me that I wouldn't otherwise know to be true. The person says this has happened, well then it's not Lashon Hara for me to accept it because the person is acknowledging that it happened. Chafetz Chaim's Chiddush is that his novel approach to this, that if the person is there but he doesn't say anything, he doesn't actively agree, just keep silence, that doesn't help you at all. The fact that he's there, maybe he's keeping silent because he's just too embarrassed to speak. Maybe he's keeping silent because he doesn't want to get involved in a fight. So the fact that a person is there isn't any more of a reason that as you're listening to a story about them, told to you by somebody else at the table, you're not allowed to believe the story about that person unless that person's willing to acknowledge and say, yes, that in fact happened. But just because the person sitting in front of you, in fact, the Chafetz Chaim says usually makes it much worse, because all that you're doing now is embarrassing the person who's sitting there. And you get into all the, remember, the Chafetz Chaim listed 31 possible averos that a person can violate when they speak Lashon Hara. Many of those have to do with the fact that the person who we're speaking about becomes embarrassed and humiliated, but it doesn't help you, the listener, be allowed to listen to the story just because the person is sitting there. Assuming that the person doesn't, in fact, they already acknowledge as a statement of fact that it's true. Is that confusing? Okay. Now, Chafetz Chaim also writes that even when it's coming from a trustworthy person, meaning somebody who is really a bona fide trustworthy person, not just because you normally trust everything they say, person is a real bona fide, acceptable, honest, erlicha Jew. Just because they're saying it doesn't make it any more appropriate for you to believe as a statement of fact that what you're hearing, which is negative about somebody else, from them. Unless it's going to be in one of the exceptions which we'll discuss, where it's going to be beneficial for someone at some time. But just because the person is trustworthy doesn't make it more of a statement of fact that I'm allowed to believe it. just because you're saying it and you're a trustworthy person, if I accept this as a statement of fact, if I believe what it is that you're saying, at the end of the day, you are my only source of information that this has happened or this person did such and such. And I am now accepting as fact a derogatory thing about person A only because of you. And the fact that you might be right, of course you're right. Again, Lashon Hara is only when it's actually true. So the fact that you're trustworthy just makes it more true, but doesn't allow me to accept it just if you are my only source of information. I can't believe something derogatory about somebody else through any other individual. That is what constitutes the prohibition of listening and accepting to Lashon Hara. Okay, so far so good? Now, Chavetz Chaim has another chiddush, another novel idea, and that is as follows. Now, he says that this is, he derives it as a biblical prohibition, but he goes to great lengths to prove it, and that is as follows. If you're listening to Lashon Hara, and you make up your mind as soon as the person begins speaking, you're like, oh boy, here it comes. And you know right away when it's coming. We all know that. The second the person starts speaking, here it goes. Says the Chofetz Chaim, even if you in your mind say, I don't want to accept this, I don't believe it, it is still prohibited min ha-Torah. It is a biblical prohibition, a violation min ha-Torah, to listen to the story, even with absolutely no intention to accept it. Just sitting there and listening is in itself biblically prohibited. Now, he writes that it's rabbinically prohibited is obvious. There are several statements in the Gemara, which I'll mention in a moment. The Gemara asks a question in Ksuvos, in the tractate Ksuvos, why the bottom half of the ear is soft and the rest of the ear has a much harder cartilage. And the Gemara says it's not to put earrings in, it's to be able to close your ears if somebody is saying something inappropriate. So the Chofetz Chaim writes, so rabbinically they cannot have to listen to inappropriate things, and he quotes numerous sources in the Talmud that describe the prohibition of listening to things, but he derives that it is a biblical prohibition as well, simply listening to something, even though you in your mind have said, I don't intend on accepting it, but it just happens to be a nice story, you're not even allowed to do that, even if you've made up, I'm not going to accept this as true. Now, therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, what do you do when you're stuck in those situations? Like, it's not really socially acceptable to, you know, take your earlobes and cover up your ears. And maybe you're not quite on that level, as I would not be on, to do that publicly. You're sitting at a Shabbos table and someone starts saying something, and it's not going to work. Now, if you can get up and leave the table, or if you could say, you know, I don't want to hear it, or I don't think we should be talking, or you could change it, that's what you need to do. And that's what we spoke about last week, the concept of who would you rather look foolish before, this human being sitting at your table for the next 15 minutes, or the King of Kings, soul of eternity? That's what... that's the internal process that we need to go through when we're sitting there and we hear it's coming and we know it's there and there are all these, there's seven other people at the table and six of them want to hear, but you know, you really shouldn't. That's what we need to do. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't work out. So says the Chofetz Chaim, well, if there's, even if I myself say I don't accept this as true, you're still not allowed to sit there and listen to it. You're not allowed to sit at the table and listen to anybody speaking Lashon Hara, even if you don't accept it as true. So says the Chofetz Chaim, what do you do? So he says you need to do three things. That's in B there. No, sorry, C. Number one is, of course, you can't believe it. As it's being said, so you're stuck in the situation, someone is saying something, can't believe it. The second thing that he says is you have to have no benefit from it. Lo nichole, it's not beneficial to you. Not feel that it's not beneficial to you. Get no benefit from it. So what does that mean, that it's no benefit? So he brings from the Gemara discusses certain types of smells or processes that would be forbidden because it came from idol worship or certain places where you're not allowed to get any benefit from it. And the Gemara has a whole discussion, well, what if somebody gets benefit and they want it or they didn't want it? And he derives from that discussion that if you're benefiting from it, that that's going to be a problem even if you don't believe it. And what you need to do is not benefit from the story. So what does it practically mean to not benefit from the story? So my understanding of that is, and I use this from, my example is from, not related to Lashon Hara, but I'll just sort of transfer it over. It transfers pretty easily. You ever had the experience where you're benching, and somebody at the table has already finished benching, or they're not benching, they're telling a story, and you're sort of pretending not to listen to the story because you're busy benching, and then as soon as they finish and they get to the punchline, you burst out laughing? Because you're listening to the story. You're enjoying what's going on. I'm pretending to be busy benching, or not even pretending. You might really be benching, but you can't. It's like hard to sort of not pay attention to that story. And at the end of the day, when the story's done, and it's funny, so you join in with everybody else and you get a good laugh because it's, you're part of it. So you can't do that in Lashon Hara. As we mentioned last week, there is a tremendous pull the stories are just so geschmack, they're just so juicy. We just love hearing that stuff. So if you're sitting there, and this is a task, this is not an easy thing. You're sitting at a table and someone's telling over a story. So it's not enough to say, I don't believe it, I don't believe it, I don't believe it, and then get the same good laugh or whatever, I don't believe it, whatever that's going on, that's the reaction to the story that's being told. If you're involved in that, well then you're part of the process. You might not believe it, but that's what the Chofetz Chaim says. It's forbidden to listen to it, even though I'm not planning on believing it. So that one needs to literally gather all one's strength together to be able to do that, to sit at a table and somehow close out what's being said and literally not be part of it. In the Chofetz Chaim's words, he writes, be a stone. That I'm not involved, I'm not part of this. And then he concludes with giving no indication that you agree to the story. Very often, you know, you can look around us, we have a lot of body language. And a person tells a story, you're like looking for some sort of reaction from the people to whom you're telling the story. You heard me, you agree with me, can you believe that, did you see that? So he writes literally, you're like a stone. Someone is doing something, it is biblically prohibited from you to engage in this activity. What do you need to do? You need yours, you become a stone. I don't believe what's being said. I don't want to get any of the enjoyment or be part of the reaction of what's going on. And I'm giving no indication that I'm acknowledging the fact that the story is being said. Not easy things to do, but it's worth at least being aware of the task that the Chofetz Chaim puts before us. This is a serious business. As we mentioned many of the statements from the sages last week about what it is that we're talking about, the severity of Lashon Hara. And the Rambam again writes that the accepting of Lashon Hara, the listening and believing of it, is worse than the speaker. When you get into those situations, that's what you sort of got to do. And the best thing to be able to do is not get into those situations, which we'll speak about in a minute. In my mind, so far, the best thing that I've come across in terms of how to stop that from happening. You know, what do you say when that situation begins? But we'll get to that. But in any case, that's what he's got so far. Now, Chofetz Chaim then discusses what happens when you know the story's true. You know already that the story is true. So, for example, someone's telling you about the fact that they didn't pick up their kids at time at school, and you know the kids were left there till you know a half hour after whatever. They canceled on you for lunch. They were supposed to, let's say, you know, you're eating at someone's house for lunch on Shabbos, and they had told you before that this other family was going to be there, and you get there and they're not there, so you know that they canceled or they didn't show up. And as the head of the household tells you where they are, they throw in some, you know, derogatory statement about how, oh, they always do that, or you can never count on them for anything. But that which they're telling you, that they didn't show up, I know that's true. I'm here, I see they didn't make it. That's not telling me something I didn't know, or that they didn't pick up their kids, or that you believe the rabbi said this and this in shul. And you were there, you know that that's what he said. Except that now it's being said over in a derogatory light. So the Chofetz Chaim writes, that is where the key lies. There's a difference between statement of fact and it being derogatory. Lashon Hara is, by definition, which I should stress over and over and over again, it's not talking about somebody. That's not the prohibition of Lashon Hara. It's when you talk about somebody and it paints them in a negative light. And as I have learned very quickly in my brief several months here in the shul, and I'm sure you've all learned from your experiences in life, there is no way to tell over the same story from two different people the same way. There's just a lot of our interpretations which go into the telling over a story, which sort of color and pad the facts of the story into however it is that we are telling it. So the Chofetz Chaim writes, when you're listening to a story that you know to be true, except this is being told in a Lashon Hara kind of way, you are then obligated to judge it favorably, to say, I know the facts are true that the person isn't here. You're painting them in a derogatory light by saying, oh, these people, they're impossible. And you invite them for Shabbos, they never show up. And they never tell me beforehand either, they just don't show up. Or the rabbi said this, this, and that, and or the way that they say, or can you believe the rabbi said this is again? So you're accepting it. Now you know it's true already. Whatever statement's being said, I don't need you to tell me that it's true, except that you're painting the person in a very derogatory light. You're painting them in a negative way. So then, says the Chofetz Chaim, you still have the prohibition, it would be listening to Lashon Hara, to accept that which is being said, which is negative, even though the kernel of fact, that's the root of the story, you happen to know is true. And therefore, our responsibility is to judge that story favorably. Yes, the person wasn't there. I accept that. I don't accept that they always do that or that they never call before. It's probably because their kid got sick on Shabbos. And don't all children always get more sick on Shabbos than any other day of Yom? That's the way that it goes. So therefore, it's my responsibility when I hear something like that, even though I know it's true what you're saying, but you're obviously painting it in a negative light. And again, I'm giving examples which are pretty easy to sort of just shift. It's not always so easy. A lot of times the stories that we hear are bad. They're not so easy to paint in a favorable light. But usually it's possible. We all know from, I've noted many times in my own life where things have happened and I say to myself or I say to Rivka, I say, if I were to tell somebody that these series of events happened and the reason why I wasn't here was because of this, nobody would ever believe me that this could possibly happen. I say that many times just to always bring that up, that it's like unbelievable. But it just happened to me. Like, this happened, and then that happened, and this, and all together, and therefore I missed X. But nobody would believe me. That. So, yeah, those things, they happen in life. And therefore, it's really rare where somebody would tell you something as a statement of fact, and you couldn't come up with a way, even though you know that the fact happened. They missed your wedding? What? That you can't come up with something that's reasonable that doesn't make the person about whom that's being said look negative. And therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, that's where our responsibility comes in as the listener hearing these stories, b'tzedek tishvot am yisrael. You have to judge our brethren favorably. And that is where that comes in. Now, he does mention that when it is impossible to judge it favorably, when the facts are so clear, that which you know and that which is being stated and that which everybody knows, this is what happened. The person did X, Y, and Z, and it is inappropriate. There's not a prohibition of listening to that. In other words, if you know it to be true, I saw it, and everything that I know, and I all puts it together, there is no way to judge it favorably, so then I'm not accepting Lashon Hara. I mean, I know the facts already to be true. The fact that you're reporting it in the negative light, that it really is not Lashon Hara then for me to accept that. Like, for example, if I say, I can't believe twice, every week she gets a phone, but it's because she's on call as a doctor. In other words, that's a great example in which you, without knowing information, you could say a fact, can't believe every week there's a phone that goes off and it's the same person every time. Now, just said like that is a negative thing. Like, everybody knows you should turn off your phones when you walk into a class. But the listener has to say, now I'm giving you, well, maybe she's on call and she's a doctor. Those are the kinds of things, like cell phones going off during davening, and all those things, where it's so easy to report it in a negative light. Like, it's just the tone, almost, that makes the person look irresponsible and negative. And our responsibility as the listener, when we hear that, is saying, cut out the facts, and just say, that doesn't mean that the person is as negative and derogatory, and in such a derogatory light as you're painting. That's my responsibility. Okay, now, even when, as the Chofetz Chaim was saying, when there is no way to judge it favorably, the facts are as they are, it's still a prohibition if it's not going to provide any benefit to you to listen to the person saying it. Because the person who's speaking is speaking Lashon Hara. You're accepting it from them is what's called lifnei iver. You're putting a stumbling block before a blind person by accepting, in other words, the person who speaks and nobody accepts it, so they're almost sort of saved from connecting that circuit because they said it, but nobody was there to believe it. So they're not really, it's not good, obviously, but you're not allowed for them to actually listen and accept it because it makes it worse for the person speaking. So you're still always limited to that. We'll talk about more of that. We'll get back to this point instead of confusing it where it is now. Okay, that is the basic guidelines of listening and accepting to Lashon Hara. Quick summary, the prohibition is believing it to be true. Chofetz Chaim writes, even if you don't plan on believing it, it's still prohibited from listening to it. And therefore, when one can't get out of it, you have to just make yourself like a stone, not get any benefit or enjoy the story that's being told, even though you're not planning on believing it. And our responsibility in listening to these stories is to always judge the story favorably, pull out whatever facts you happen to might know be true, pull out the facts, and constantly be in the habit of saying, well, maybe this, maybe that, maybe this, and maybe that, which is a great habit to be in anyway, because it's just a great thing. Besides the fact that Torah says, b'tzedek tishvot am yisrael, that's a responsibility, it just will make for a better life for all of us if we get into the habit of doing that. Okay, That's the prohibition of accepting and listening to Lashon Hara. Some exceptions, a number of them. See how far we can get. Okay, number one, where is it that you are allowed to speak or say Lashon Hara? So the first exception is based on a Gemara. Now, Chofetz Chaim severely limits the Gemara. There's a big dispute how to read the Gemara based on the commentators, but the Chofetz Chaim approach is as follows. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Erechin, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, he said, in all my days, I have never said something about someone and had to turn around to see if he was there. Never said anything. That's like the worst feeling. When you say something and all of a sudden you have to check and see who was there, did they hear it, and whatever. Says Rabbi Yossi, I never said anything that I was required to then look around and see who was listening, because I would have said the same thing even if he was there. It doesn't matter to me. He could be there, he cannot be there. I never said anything that I would have refrained from saying had I known that he was there. Now, some would take from this Gemara that if you're willing to say whatever you're willing to say in the presence of the person about whom you're speaking, again, our classic Shabbos table example, and you're telling over, I can't believe it, this, and you're telling a story about the person and they're sitting right there, well, if you're willing to tell the story in front of him, so it sounds like it should be okay, because that's what Rabbi Yossi said. I never said anything and turned around. So if I'm willing to say it in front of him, it sounds like it would be okay. The Chofetz Chaim, based on the Rambam's understanding of this, doesn't read the Gemara that way. Because the Rambam writes explicitly that whether or not you're in the presence of your friend or not, whether or not he hears you, he doesn't hear you, either way, it's Lashon Hara. There's absolutely no leniency just because the person is standing in front of you as you're speaking about him. What then does it mean that Rabbi Yossi said, I would never say something if I needed to turn around and check if he was there? So the Chofetz Chaim explains, many of our words are inherently parv. There's nothing inherently evil about the way that we're saying it. It's the context, body language, and tone in which we say it that provides all of the meaning of our words. The Chofetz Chaim brings an example, which I'll share with you when we talk about some of our own examples. The Chofetz Chaim example is if somebody says, looking for a fire, I need a fire, anyone know that I can get a fire? So the person's response is, yeah, go to that person's house, they always have a fire going, because they're always cooking meat and fish and eggs and potatoes. So I could be saying that in a very positive way. They are always hosting guests, they have people in their house, in and out, they have a large family, you need a fire, oh! Go to that family. They always have it because there's always food up on the stove. Now, I could mean that in a negative way, saying something along the lines of, they're always eating. It's like unbelievable. There's always a fire. You could walk in any time of day, someone's mashing. So the words can be very much parf. I'm just directing you to Plony's house because in that house you'll find fire because they're always cooking. The way that I say that, the expressions that I use, the body language that I use, will determine whether or not I'm saying that in a very negative light or in a positive light. Or it doesn't have to be positive, it should be positive even. I'm just stating it as a fact. Or you need to have a collection for whatever, a group of people get together, we're going to raise money for this and this and that. Who should we ask? So the person will say, oh, ask them, you'll probably get something from them. Ask them, you'll probably get something from them. You could say it in a way in which there's total sarcasm, that there's no way you're getting a send from them, or you could say it in a way that means, well, they're very kind and generous people, go ask them something. Chofetz Chaim writes, that's what you're allowed to say in the presence of the person himself. The person is there, and you're saying words which can be interpreted in several ways, either in a positive light or in a negative light, depending on how you would say it, that you can say in the presence of the person, because what Rabbi Yossi is saying, there's no way you're going to say it over in a negative light in front of the person, but the way that we can tell that you mean to say it in a positive way is because of the fact that the person is there. So that the only leniency in saying something in the presence of the person themselves is if the word that you're saying might have been misinterpreted, but it sort of is interpreted in a positive light because of the fact that the person is there. Which really limits this halacha. I'm saying this only because there's a Gemara out there which some interpret to give you a lot of leniency in front of the person themselves. The Chofetz Chaim is clear. If what you're saying is a juicy piece of gossip, you just happen to be brazen enough to say it right in front of the person, there's no leniency because the person is there, and it's just as forbidden in front of the person as it would be not in front of the person. The only leniency we have are on those ambiguous statements. Now, it's worth noting Our society has changed drastically in the last, say, 5 years with the advent of email, in which our primary mode of communication for so many of us is no longer the spoken word, but it's become the written word. And many of us either have long since forgotten or never learned the fine nuances of the written language. And so we are now communicating in a way in which we don't really have that fine nuance of language to express what it is that I mean. And we just have these words, often taken without the intonations of the voice, without the appropriate context, these just staccatos, you know, we don't write really well in email. And very often we interpret statements in the written form of email very harsh and negative, or the opposite, and the meaning of the person who's actually writing it is often lost over an email when they're not using their words and their voice and their expressions to do so. Those are the kinds of things where you have these phrases where you're not really sure how to interpret them. How do I read that in a way that, in a negative way, in a positive way? And it's in those things where if it was, you know, CC'd to the person themselves, you could be more, you know, that would be the more modern example of, well, they must mean it in the positive way. And us, very often things get forwarded all the time. You're reading all sorts of things about, that's a horrible element of an email. Just the click of a button. Talk about rechilas. Rechilas is all about telling you what they said about you. So here we have, at least their spoken word, and you got to transfer it over. Here it's just, you know, I could forward you what you said to him about him, and it's all over the place. So where it's ambiguous in terms of its interpretation, if it was said to the person themselves, that's the only place where we would have this leniency, because it's not so derogatory. You must mean it in a more positive light if you would say it to the person themselves. But if it's clear that it's a negative thing, then it doesn't matter. As we mentioned last week, Lashon Hara is in the written word, Lashon Hara is in the spoken word. It doesn't matter. You would be prohibited from speaking negatively to someone else about anyone else, whether or not it's in an email form or a written form, unless with this one leniency would be if you're also writing to the person about whom you're speaking, and it's in one of those ambiguous ways where it's not clear how to interpret your words, there the halacha would say it's okay because you must mean it in a positive way. You wouldn't write it to the person themselves. But if it's clearly negative, then there's nothing, no easier way. It's not any lenient because of the fact that it's in the person's presence. Okay, listening exceptions. Where are you allowed to listen to Lashon Hara? So the primary example, and that which will define almost everything else, is for protection. To protect oneself. This is rooted into a Gemara, where the Gemara says there was a report that someone was trying to kill someone else, or a certain Rabbi Yochanan was reporting to Gedalia from our Tzom Gedalia story that someone was trying to kill him, and he didn't listen to it, and eventually he was killed, and the Gemara holds him accountable on some level for that. And what does it mean? It was Lashon Hara about the person who was trying to kill you. You're not allowed to believe that he was trying to kill you. And the Gemara says, yeah, to believe it is true, you're not allowed to do. But to be concerned over the fact that someone just said that this person is trying to kill you, you gotta take the necessary precautions. And with that statement, the Gemara sets up this new rule of, there's a difference between believing as true and taking the necessary precautions to protect yourself from some type of either physical, financial, or emotional harm because of that which is being said. Now, there are a lot of examples of this as we will see. Now, this allows for anything that will affect you negatively in the future. So it doesn't matter if it's today, it might be a week from now, a month from now, if the information that you're reporting to me might affect me in an adverse way, then I'm allowed to listen to that, never allowed to believe it as a statement of fact, but I'm allowed to accept that as something that I need to take the necessary precautions for. So I'll just skip you down to number 3 as an example. Someone says, did you hear about Plony X, Y, and Z? I heard he's having trouble. He's a child molester. Serious stuff. You can't just ignore that and say, Lashon Hara, I don't want to hear it. So the halacha says, what do you need to do? Someone says something like that. That's serious, serious business. So you're required by the halacha not to accept it as true, which would mean that, as the example that I gave, so the shul would say, I'm the gabbai and I heard that. I'm not allowed to withhold an aliyah from this person because I heard that he's a child molester. That would be accepting it as true. If, you know, if his time in the rotation came up and I said, oh no, I'm not giving that guy an aliyah, that would mean I accepted it. I believed it about him. And therefore, to act upon that would be forbidden. But to allow my children to play in his house, absolutely forbidden. I'm not allowed to do that either. because I have to take the necessary precautions in accepting that which I'm hearing as a safety measure, but I'm not allowed to act in a way that's unrelated to the report that's being given. So if you say you're inviting a person to your house for Shabbos and you have children, that's, I don't need to do that, and I'm not allowed to do that, because if this is the report that I got, that fits within that particular report, and therefore that's acceptable, because I'm concerned for the safety of my children. But let's say you heard the person was a tax evader, which is also illegal, and lashon hara. So I'm not allowed to believe that. Am I allowed to say I'm not going to invite him for Shabbat? I can't believe that. There's a thief. What is that? There's no way, you're not protecting anything in your house. Even with the guy is being claimed, what they're claiming against him, he's not going to steal something from your house. That's not the issue. So therefore, you would not be allowed to withhold an invitation from somebody who somebody said about him evaded his taxes. So to not invite that person to your house would mean you believe the piece of lashon hara that you're not allowed to do. If you didn't want that person to be your accountant, that's fair, because that's just being concerned that this is not the kind of person I want dealing with my monetary issues. And so that is the general rule that the Gemara sets up, that you're allowed to listen. So someone starts telling you something, and you hear that it is of that nature, says the Gemara, you're allowed to listen and take every necessary precaution based on what it is that's being said, but you're not allowed to act on it in any way unrelated to that, that would show or demonstrate that you actually believe it to be true, because you're not allowed to believe it to be true, even though you must protect yourself. Now, the Chofetz Chaim writes that this does not have to be even yourself. This could even be information which could help someone else. I am allowed to listen to someone speaking lashon hara about somebody else, because the information that they're giving me is relevant to somebody else. So, for example, in the accountant who's, let's say, a thief kind of guy, so even though I don't use him as my accountant, but if I know other people do, and I want to protect them because they're going to end up getting caught in a ring of all sorts of trouble, so then it would be permissible for me to listen to that which is being said about him, because I happen to have a person who I need to tell and share that information with, who they also, without believing that it's true, need to protect themselves from that. Now, you're also allowed to do this if you're going to help the person himself who's being spoken about. You happen to be, not everybody's in a position to do this, but if you are in a position to do this is the classic heter. This is why you're allowed to tell me all sorts of stuff, because the rabbi is ostensibly in a position to do something about it. So that provided, as we'll speak about in a moment, that the speaker is doing it for that purpose, so then I need to hear this, not because I believe it to be true, but because I need to be concerned that it's true, and I need to address this with that person and try to remedy the situation. Even though I can't really believe it's true, but because you're saying it, it's enough of cause of a concern that it needs to be addressed if it is true. So all of those are reasons where you are allowed to listen to whatever is being told. To tell it to your neighbor, who is not in a position to do anything about it, who it's not relevant to because they're not looking for an accountant, they don't have any children or whatever it is, or whatever it is that you're telling them is not relevant to them, on that you get caught by the regular din of lashon hara. You're not allowed to speak it, you're not allowed to listen to it. It doesn't help anyone, and no one's in a position to do anything about it. So, two more points. So the number of the Chofetz Chaim also adds that the speaker must also be trying to help, as I just alluded to. The person doing the speaking must be doing so in order for you to be allowed to listen to it, because the speaker wants to do something about it. Sometimes what you have is where, I get this all the time, but where people are telling me things, not because they necessarily want to help the person, just because it's a good juicy piece of gossip and I just happen to be the guy they want to tell. So then even though I may be in a position to help the person, I'm not allowed to listen to that from the person who's speaking because of the separate prohibition that the Chofetz Chaim said, lifnei iver. I'm putting a stumbling block in front of this person by allowing him to tell me something when he has no intention of helping. Now, it gets into a sticky situation because I'm in a position to help and I have to stop him from saying it. But the technical rules are, it needs to be a partnership of both the speaker and the listener, in which the speaker needs to share this information because they want something done to help the situation, not because they're just sitting around shooting the breeze and they have a juicy piece of gossip to share. They want the situation to be remedied, and they're speaking to a person who can remedy the situation. Under those circumstances, you're allowed to listen. And on this, the Chofetz Chaim says the Eitzah, the suggestion, which is what I would allude to earlier at any Shabbos table, as soon as you hear someone beginning to speak, and you know it's coming, and we always know it's coming, says that what you need to ask, you need to say, will this help me, and can I help the situation? Those are two great questions. They're sort of innocuous, they're not so offensive, because when you say to someone, it doesn't go very well. Because the person who's speaking sort of gets on the defensive, and they feel sort of, it doesn't go very well. This is a much gentler way of saying, because maybe you're saying, I'm giving you the benefit of that. I'm not just accusing you of being a rasha, of being some evil person who's spreading gossip around. I'm saying, oh, maybe, is this going to help me? Are you sharing a piece of information that I can do something with that will help me, or that I can do something about? And if the answer is no, then usually it's a nice break in the conversation. Now, very often it's yeah. It allows for the halacha to play its course. You're about to say something. Will this help me? Can I do something about it? If no, then I'm really not interested. That's what the Chofetz Chaim says. That's the response when you begin to hear someone saying something. Those two very simple questions, because it gives you a way out. And it might be that you do need to hear the pieces of information, if it will help you, meaning it will protect you in some way. Or, and again, even when it will protect you, as he writes this, every time he writes this, he says, but remember, you're not allowed to believe it. Remember, you're not allowed to believe it. Can't believe it is true, but I'm allowed to take that information and whatever steps are necessary to protect myself, my family, my friends, my neighbors, based on that information, I am allowed to do without believing it as a fact of life. But if those two questions, you can't answer those questions in the affirmative, you can't say that you're not in a position to help this person, just sharing information, what I heard, then you can't listen to it. But if you are in a position, for any number of reasons, either because you're a friend of the person or because, even if you are in a position to get to somebody who can help, let's say you happen to know the person's parents. So I'm not in a position to help the person, but the speaker doesn't have a relationship with the parents, and for them to go over, it's not going to, but they're telling you, yes, this, I can help the problem because I can get this information to the people who need it. All in that, says the Chofetz Chaim, is permissible to listen to, not accepting as a statement of fact is true, but I need to be able to say to these person's parents, this is what I heard about your son, this is what I heard about your daughter, I think you should look into that. Then you're allowed to accept that. Again, if both parties are on the same page, the speaker and the listener are doing that for the sake of helping out, under those circumstances, you are allowed to listen. Okay. Also, under the leniencies of listening to Lashon Hara, says the Chofetz Chaim, if you can disprove the story. Here he writes, this is a big mitzvah to listen. If you were at shul, for example, just an example which may or not happen every week in every community in the country, and you heard what the rabbi said, and you know where he was addressing and what the context was, and you're at someone's Shabbos table, and the person starts saying, you're not going to believe, and they launch into what was said, and they paint it in a light that would, the way that it's being painted, paint the rabbi in a very negative way. So you are allowed, it is a mitzvah for you to let that story go out, and if you know, because this person's God and he's going to go, who knows who else he's going to then be able to say, no, you didn't understand what he said, and work through whatever took place, doing that reinterpretation which we're always obligated to be able to do, but here you happen to know it. I was there, or I have the information. So many times, the core of Lashon Hara is that there is a piece or two or three or four of information that's missing that sort of leaves open this vacuum of interpretation. And without that information, it really does look pretty negative. I mean, the person, after all, missed the wedding. They just missed it. And if you didn't have X, Y, and Z, if you didn't have that information, it's really an easy thing to say. It's a pretty negative thing. So if you happen to hear that, and you're hearing a story being told, says the Chofetz Chaim, it's a mitzvah to get involved in that conversation, to be able to disprove it and add the information that you have in order to avoid that problem in the future for others. And the Chofetz Chaim also adds that this is great advice for whenever you have already heard Lashon Hara. It's too late. Or you weren't able, sometimes it happens just too fast, and before you know it, it's already done. So you weren't able to close your ears, you weren't able to walk away, you weren't able to pretend you were, you're ready, you got a good laugh out of it. It's like too late. Now I just heard a really geschmack story about somebody. It's just great. But now they look really bad. Says the Chofetz Chaim, what do you do now? What you do now is, your job is to reinterpret that story and find out how it could be that it wasn't really that way. So that I could disprove the story. So even though I just got a great laugh at this person's expense, who they look really terrible, so my job is to now say, but you know what, when you think about it, I'm sure what really happened was this, this, and that. So that at the end of the day, you're not really believing this person to be in a negative light, because you are going through the task of painting the person back in a positive light. And that is what our responsibility is. So every time, even if it's too late and you already heard it, this idea of being able to disprove the story, you become a little, a detective. It's really not such a big deal. Again, as I mentioned earlier, life is so complex. It's really not hard to be able to reinterpret almost any story that you hear. If you're willing to go through that, it's so much easier for us to believe that the person was evil, that the person did whatever it was that was said about them. But if you only know it from this one person, so the halacha says you're not allowed to believe that that's really what happened. Every Jew, Chofetz Chaim has a great way of saying it, he says, every Jew starts off with the cheskas kashrus. They start off with the status of being a kosher, God-fearing, Torah mitzvah observant Jew. This person is now telling me something about them which makes them not that way. So this person is violating the law by telling this to me. What right do I have to remove person A from his status of being a good, God-fearing Jew because you, who are violating the law, are reporting to me what he's doing? So I'm obligated to maintain that person's status of integrity against the person who's speaking it, who's violating the law, by saying whatever it is that you're telling me can't possibly be the way that it happened or the only way that it happened, and I therefore need to almost disprove the story in my mind so that I am not accepting as fact anything negative about somebody else from your story. Okay, now the Chofetz Chaim is the last and C there, B, C, fascinating heter, leniency, in which he says, you're allowed to listen to someone speak Lashon Hara if it will release the anger of the speaker. Person is just enraged over what took place. So you're allowed to listen if it will release that pressure cooker. And he adds, and I have underlined, if it will prevent him from spreading it further. Sometimes you're very irate, but I don't care how many people I say it to, I'm going to be saying it to whoever is willing to listen to me. I can't believe this person did this to me, and I'm going to tell everybody I know. So then you're not allowed to say, oh, I'll listen in, because the person's so angry, this will hopefully dissipate their anger. They're going on and on and on. It's not going to help. There's no leniency for that situation. This is sometimes used between husbands and wives, or between a teacher or a rebbe and a student, where you need to tell somebody about it. So the only leniency the Chofetz Chaim is if otherwise you're going to be telling people who will believe it. So I'm sort of stepping in, saying, I know the law. I know that you're all angry and it's an emotional issue, and the person clearly did something, but you're really took it in a negative way. If you tell it to me, I'll be able to say, I don't really believe it happened. I know there's another side. I know there are 1,000 sides to every story. So you know what? I'm allowed to listen to you tell the story so that you get it off your chest and don't tell it to your neighbor who will believe it and will tell it the next person, and before you know it, the whole community knows. Under those circumstances, I am allowed to listen to the story knowing that I'm not going to believe it, and I'll hopefully be able to address your issues. This is not a simple one to actually be able to say that you're going to be able to do. This is definitely certain. Again, spouses, very often in the rabbi's office, you'll have a situation such as that. But it is out there, where if you have an ability, if you have a close friend, a neighbor, where you know you have that relationship with them, that if they'll be able to tell you, you can dissipate the situation where they won't spread it further. You are allowed to listen to that under those circumstances, and the Chofetz Chaim includes that within his mitzvah to listen to Lashon Hara, because you're really preventing it from being a bigger problem. Because if you don't do it, it's going to go to somebody else, and that person might either accept it themselves and then even further spread it. Okay, some speaking exceptions. Where are you allowed to speak Lashon Hara? So again, based on the protection issue, is the same concept. Not only in listening to it to protect yourself, but you are allowed to speak it to protect others. You're allowed to tell the Rav, you're allowed to tell family members, provided, again, that the person to whom you're speaking are in a position to do something about it. So if they're in a position either that they need to protect themselves or that they can fix the problem, you are allowed to report to some authority figure, be it the person's family, be it a Rav, or be it anyone who has an ability, being that this is what I saw. There's a difference between the speaker and the listener. The listener is only getting the information from the speaker. I can't believe what you saw. I'm not allowed to believe that about another person just because you're telling me. But when I'm the speaker, that means I'm the one, I just witnessed an event. This is what I saw. The person did X, Y, or Z. So I need to tell somebody because this person needs to be corrected. This person, this needs to be stopped. So I'm allowed to tell that to a person who has an ability to do that, even though that person's not allowed to believe me that it really happened, because they're not allowed to believe something negative just based on my words, but they're allowed to accept it on the premise that they're then going to do something about it. So certainly one is allowed to tell their rabbi or family members about those things, and it has to be with the intention, again, of course, of this needs to be fixed. The Chofetz Chaim also writes, you're allowed to tell your children or students or friends about something that someone else did to distance themselves from that person if that person is engaged in not appropriate behavior. When you do that, says the Chofetz Chaim, you must explain to them why you are telling that to them. You're not allowed just to say, oh, that this person, he's not a good guy. Don't hang around him. You need to say, you know, this is wrong, and I want you not to be there, and I'm only telling you this because I know that if you get involved with this person, it needs to be explained that I'm not just speaking negatively about people, that I'm doing this for the sake of protecting you, and I don't want you to be there, because as we all know, especially students, children, they get the mixed messages, oh, it's okay for you to speak, also, no, it's okay. It needs to be explained why you're doing it, and when you're doing it, and what the exact purpose is of why you are doing that. Along those same lines, the Chofetz Chaim says if you're making a hire, you're running a business, or whatever that you're doing, you are allowed to ask around for references. You're allowed to say, what do you know about this person? What is this person? And when you're up front, he says again, you have to say, this is why I'm doing it. I would like, you're not allowed to say, just call somebody up and say, so what do you know about this person? You're not allowed to do it, because that doesn't work. Because the person who's speaking, you're just throwing a trap out in front of them. You're allowed to say, I'm about to hire this and this person for this and this position. I need to know these things about them. What do you know? And the person who's responding is allowed to say, if it's going to hurt you, if it's going to cause greater problems not to share the information, they are allowed to respond what it is that they know, because you're protecting yourself. You then, as the listener of that, need to say, I can't really believe that this person is such a thief. I don't believe that. But I'm allowed to protect myself and say, I'm not going to hire him because of that. Now again, am I allowed to then not extend him a Shabbos invitation? Nothing to do with that, assuming that that's the kind of thief that is. That would not be allowed in your search for references. And certainly about, you know, Shidduchim is the same issue in which you're saying, I need to know X, Y, and Z about the person if it's going to protect you or your family from something, to then react to it in a way that doesn't have any effect on the Shidduch process. You're not allowed to do it because that would mean that you're believing it, you're showing that you believe it to be true, and you don't want to have anything to do with these people. You're not allowed to do that. But to say that I don't want my child marrying this person because that's just going to cause all sorts of problems, that is within the confines of protection. Now today's world is a little bit crazy, and what is defined as, you know, a problem to get involved in has become really, that's a whole separate issue. But assuming that we're talking about something which is really a problem, a serious health issue or mental health issue, that is entirely okay, assuming that you're upfront as to why you're asking it, and the person who's responding it is also responding in a manner that is there to help and protect you. And the Chofetz Chaim mentions, I didn't put it in your notes all the time, that you're not allowed to ever do this with somebody who you know doesn't get along with the person that you're speaking about. You're not allowed to call those people for references, because then the person who's speaking, it's impossible to ask them to say, oh, I'm only doing this to protect you. If you know that they don't get along, that is not a person you're allowed to get references from, because they're going to lay into the people, they're going to exaggerate. That is never allowed. It has to be where you, the speaker, and the listener are on the same page, and we're doing this for the sake of protecting us from whatever it is that we're about to get involved in. And the last thing we'll do tonight, the last time you're allowed to speak is Apikoros, someone who is a non-believer. The Torah says, it was a lesson from Shie, Oseleich Rachil Ba'amecha. You're not allowed to walk as a gossip monger amongst your people. So the Gemara Darshan, the Gemara explains it has to be Ba'amecha, somebody who is like you in your nation, which the Gemara explains when that phrase is used many times in the Torah, somebody who is observant of Torah Umitzos. So anyone who is not within Amisecha, within your people, who has removed himself from our people by denying any level of Torah, prophecy, they deny even one pasuk, or they deny the validity of even one mitzvah, has removed himself from amongst your people, and there is not a prohibition. In fact, under certain circumstances, depending on what it is exactly that they've done, there's a mitzvah almost to deride them and speak negatively about them, that it shouldn't spread amongst the Jewish people, but that usually isn't as relevant today. And the Chafetz Chaim includes within that any Russia who violates something which he knows to be wrong, somebody who knows he's not allowed to be doing something and continuously and publicly does it, is also not included within this prohibition. You'll have to say that is, that which they are doing. Most, again, in the Jewish world today, most people don't have that status. They don't know what they're doing is wrong. They don't believe that it's wrong. It's a different level. But somebody who knows, is brought up, and violates is not within that that category. Okay, the last thing in front of three people is really a much larger discussion, which we will do next week, Mir Hashem.